I'm going to be talking about an organ I think that we take for granted, an organ that is remarkable. And I hope from my lecture tonight, exploring the extraordinary heart, that you will agree with me that it is a wonder of the world. This lecture is going to be mixed with seriousness and fun, because I need to keep you engaged. I don't want you all going to the bar all the time. So, just a bit of seriousness. Cardiovascular disease is this country's biggest killer. It terminates the life of Maori and Pacific people 7 to 8 years earlier than non-Maori and Pacific, and that is an inequity that we want to resolve. I'm a research professor at the university. I've been a research professor looking at heart research for over 35 years, and I also direct a new heart research center at the university called Manaaki Manoa. My mother and father both died of heart attacks, and my maternal and paternal grandparents all died of heart attacks. So my motivation, as you can imagine, is fairly high to try and understand why it is we die of heart attacks. What can we do to help a heart that might be needing help, such as in heart failure? Tonight, I want to start by going back to the very first heartbeat. And that occurs in the sixth week of pregnancy. And within the uterus, you would find evidence of some cells coming together and starting a rhythmic process that will not stop until the day you die. Within the uterus alone, your heart will beat 48 million times. Over the course of this evening's lecture, your heart will have beaten 2,800 times. Since breakfast, 50,000 times. And if it's your birthday today, then your heart will have beaten 37 million times since your last birthday. That is remarkable. And you can see I've learnt these facts off by heart. What I would like to do is to first demonstrate to you something remarkable about the heart. It is a muscle. It's a very special muscle. And I'd just like a volunteer, if I may. Oh, yes, sir, please. Thank you. Gosh. Quick off the mark. If you could come here and just sit on this chair. That would be great. Thank you. Can you tell us your name?
My name's Andrew.
Andrew, thank you. And what's your profession, Andrew?
I'm an obstetrician.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm a gynecologist as well.
Oh, a gynecologist. That's interesting. You obviously got quite strong hands then. Reasonable? Okay. So what I'd like to demonstrate is that the heart beats to raise blood pressure to around 90 millimeters of mercury. And 90 millimeters of mercury is about here. And what I'm going to ask Andrew to do is to pump up that mercury column with one of his hands and see if he can reach 90 millimeters of mercury. And I will show you where the mercury is with my finger. So in your own time, start pumping away. Okay, you're about 20 now. Can you go a little bit harder, a bit faster? You're about 25, 26. Consciousness is 60 millimeters of mercury, so we haven't gained consciousness yet. Can you keep going, maybe a bit harder, a bit faster? How are you feeling?
Quite tired.
You're quite tired already, interesting. While he tries to get the mercury column up a bit higher, I've got a joke about a gynecologist. Do you know what they call a gynecologist in the Australian outback? Dr. Bush. So how's that arm?
Oh, it's tired.
It is tired. Okay, that's the point. So clearly, thank you very much, Andrew, and I think we should have a round of applause. Good sport. Thank you. And before you leave, you have a chocolate fish, because we're at the fish market. And you have a chocolate heart. Oh, don't go. There you go. You're welcome. Thank you. No, it's all right. You take them, please. It's bad for my heart. Skeletal muscle that you use in the gym or as we're moving around, very different. It fatigues. A heart does not fatigue. And I did mean to say earlier that because we're here at the fish market and because we're talking about hearts, I think this really is the heart and soul of Auckland tonight. And I hope you enjoyed that pun, but heart and soul. Yeah, sort of, maybe. Okay. Yeah, you need to get with it. You need to keep up here, all right? All right, so what I would like to do now is to show you a little bit about my heart. Now, in order to do that, I am actually going to have to strip down to my heart. And that, therefore, means I need a little bit of music. So, if you'll excuse me a moment. I really enjoyed that. And with all the excitement, the microphone's come off, but never mind. So what we have revealed here, is a heart. And what I wanted to show you, really, is the circulation through the heart, because the heart is actually two pumps. We have one pump. Shall I just wait till we've got connected up again? Is it on? No.
Something happened there.
Should I use this? I don't think that's working either. Okay now? Oh, great. Okay, good. Thank you. Well done. So, we have a heart. Blood, the blue pipe, because blood changes color when it's oxygenated or not, as it comes back from your body, it's already delivered the oxygen to your tissues, it returns to the right side. And it enters a chamber called the atrium, the right atrium, which squeezes blood into the right ventricle, which drives blood out to the lungs. It goes through the lungs and enters then the left side of the heart into the left atrium before it then ends up in the left ventricle, which is really the powerhouse. This is the part of the heart that drives blood to the entire body, except the lungs. And you notice that this side is red because as the blood goes through the lungs, it changes color from a bluey color to a red color. And that's because of the hemoglobin in the blood changes color when it picks up oxygen. The heart is pumping each side 5 liters a minute, which is, at rest, a considerable amount of blood. But it also can increase the amount of blood that it pumps, and it can do that quite effectively. And I've written here, remarkably, that since breakfast, you have pumped out 40 bathfuls of blood, and in a year, you will have pumped 2.6 million litres of blood, which is equivalent to the Olympic-sized swimming pool. A remarkable organ. A remarkable organ. I want now to show you something very important, because I need to tell you that the way in which the heart works is governed by valves. And valves are like one-way streets. They control the direction of blood flow. And to be able to show you the valves, I'm going to have a little bit more music. And this music you may remember from a movie called... what was it called? Full Monty. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
All right, so this is the Full Monty. And that's how you do it with leaving your hat on. The valves, I hope you can see them, remarkable, but we have valves between the atria and the ventricle, and between the ventricle and the outflow tubes on both sides. And they're absolutely critical because they prevent backflow of blood, making sure it goes in the right direction. Now, at Manaki Manawa, we have an idea to make new valves, particularly for children with rheumatic heart disease, which unfortunately plagues these shores, yet we are a developed country, and this is unacceptable. The problem with heart valve disease in young children is that it means the children are fitted with a synthetic valve which does not grow, but the heart does grow, and so they have to have repeated operations. At Manaki Manawa, we have our Grow Our Own Heart Valve project, where we're taking tissue from those patients and we are making them customized their own heart valves, which we wish to implant into those children. Those valves will be from cells from those children, so they will not be rejected, and those valves will be living, and so they will grow with the heart, and so they will not need to have repeated operations. That's the sort of thing that we can do in the Heart Research Centre, which combines many disciplines of expertise across the piece. And I hope one day we'll be able to eradicate rheumatic heart disease. Now, one thing about the heart is, yes, we know it pumps, but it also generates its own electricity. And that electricity is being generated around this part of the heart here. Because you have to coordinate the heart contractions. The atria up here have to contract before the ventricles. That electricity generated over a lifetime would drive a house, supply a house with electricity for 90 days. That's what your heart is doing. It's generating its own electricity. In fact, if we take the heart out of the body, it will continue to contract because it's automatic. It has that intrinsic ability. So I'm going to show you now what the heart sounds like. And what you normally use for that is the good old stethoscope. And you put that on your chest. And if I get this close to the microphone, we should be able to hear my heart. Can you hear that? Lub-dub. Lub-dub. Oh, well, it goes on anyway, but don't worry about it. I've fooled you at least. The lub dub is these valves closing. The lub is the atrioventricular valve, the green ones for those that can see, and the dub is the other valves, the black ones, that fire blood or open to allow blood out of the heart. So that's why you can hear those noises. And those noises are rather useful for diagnosis because you can hear additional noises when those valves are not fully closing properly. You can hear regurgitation. You don't hear that nice, crisp lub-dub. Now, what we're going to attempt is something quite interesting now, because we're actually going to have a look at my heart, and I'm just going to bring a screen across so that if we could turn the RTB off and just make it a little bit darker, I thought it would be good just to show you my heart working, and this is true now, because no one would put KY jelly on themselves in front of 100 people, right? But that's what's going to have to happen. So I have here the latest GE Healthcare probe. It's a ultrasound probe that will allow us to look really at my heart now, because I'm not taking off anything more. I'm hoping that we can see my heart beating and really try to put some context to what I've been drawing on my T-shirts. So not to embarrass myself, I'm just going to put on a gown. And Tanya, thank you so much. We're going to try and get the... There we go. Probe underneath. Hopefully you can see the screen. Could we turn the RTB off? Not seeing an awful lot yet, just bear with me. Ah, can you see that? Beautiful. Thank you. So you can see my valves opening and closing here. Here is one chamber, here's the atria. Blood moving through here into the ventricle, and then from the ventricle out. Could you put the color on, please, Tanya? So we'll be able to... there you go. So now what you should see is blood moving, the red blood... is moving away, and the blue blood is moving towards us. So the color allows us to look... Just lost a little bit. That's better. There we go. You can now see the red blood pouring into this ventricle and the blue blood coming this way. And so the color allows us to look at the direction of blood and make sure that the blood is not regurgitating, that the valves are properly closing and opening, and that the blood's going in the obviously going in the right direction and not backing up. Round of applause for Tanya. Thank you. Now, one thing that the heart is a remarkable pump is that it can increase the amount of blood flowing out by approximately 7 times. So normally 5 litres a minute, if you're really fit, you can get up to 35 litres a minute. And 35 litres a minute is 2.5 times the flow of a hose pipe, and it's equivalent to the flow you get when you fill your car up at the garage. I mean, it's quite a decent flow, right, at full tilt. Your heart rate, the maximal heart rate you can get will depend on your age. So it's 220 beats minus your age will be your maximal heart rate that you can get. So combinations of increasing the speed of the pump is one way to increase the output of your heart, particularly during exercise. So that would be equivalent of this syringe of me just pushing the syringe in and out faster and faster. But the other thing the heart does is it can balloon out. It can take in more blood before it then contracts. So now with a syringe, I'm doing this. And that's called stroke volume. So the stroke volume is normally 70 mils. 70 mils is something like, I was hoping this would be beer, but they haven't offered me beer. I was, I would have drunk it, but 70 mils is about that much per contraction. But this can increase dramatically when you need more blood flow. So you've got the ability to increase rate and stroke volume to give you that extra amount of blood flow to, for example, skeletal muscle that will be exercising under conditions of exercise. All right, now, heart rate does increase, as we know, and the question is what tells it to increase? And what tells it to increase is our brain. Our brain is connected to every single blood vessel in your body and the heart. And there are two nerves that go to the heart. One is an accelerator to speed it up, and one is a brake to slow it down. And I'm going to ask someone to come up here now, and I'm going to get them to show you how they can change their heart rate by breathing. Because you can't consciously increase your heart rate. But we know through yoga and also Maturanga Māori that there are ways in which we can control our breathing to control our heart rate. And we're going to have a go now for you to listen to a heart beat changing simply by altering your breathing pattern. So, Ava, would you like to come up? This is my daughter. Nothing like a bit of family help. Do you want to come here? Okay. What I'm going to do... Do you want to sit here? What I'm going to do is I'm going to put on a pulse oximeter little cuff on Ava's finger, and this measures blood pulsing because... The heart, obviously, as you saw, my heart, your heart, it's a pulsatile pump. So this pulse oximeter detects blood flow through a finger. And what we should hear is this... Yep, this is gone. Good. What we should hear is... Ava's heart rate. And she's going to put her hand up when she breathes in and put her hand down when she breathes out. Speeding it up. Listen, speeds up on inspiration, slows down on expiration. Do you hear that? Isn't that amazing? Just by breathing. Beautiful. If that is a... Thank you very much, Ava. Round of applause. That is a sign of good health, youth, and unfortunately, when people get heart disease, no more heart rate variability. Gone. So we raise the question in Manaaki Manawa, why is it then, when you fit a pacemaker, this is a pacemaker, this is the battery pack with electronics, goes underneath your skin and your chest, and these leads... I'll loop down the vessels and end up probably one in the left ventricle and one in the right ventricle. And it provides a stimulus to make your heart beat a bit quicker so that you overcome the effects of heart failure, which makes you tired, sleepy, lethargic. You can no longer exercise. But these pacemakers don't pace like nature paces. It's metronomic. So at Manaaki Manawa, we've made a brand new pacemaker that mimics that variable pacing. And those of you who've got smart watches, on your smart watch, you will see heart rate variability, HRV. And the bigger the heart rate variability is, the physically fitter and healthier you are. So why then are we pacing metronomically when we know nature's way of pacing is to provide that beautiful variability that you heard? And I'll let you into a little, I'll let you into a little secret. New Zealand is about to start the world's first trial of a heart rate variable pacemaker. And this will happen in Hamilton and Wellington over the course of the next 18 months. And we will compare metronomic pacing versus heart rate variability pacing, because our preclinical animal work has shown tremendous effects of using nature's pacing, that variable pacing. So that's something to look out for, and that's something that's very exciting. Thank you. So I just wanted to play you another track, because this is the theme music of tonight's talk. Does anyone remember this song? Does anyone know who sung it? Yes? Anyone know who sung that? And the year? Prizes are available. Who is it? Anyone? Tanya? Well, do you want to whisper it to me? It's the Whispers. Okay. Now, coming back to this variable pacing, you know, the medieval archers firing their arrows release their arrow on exhalation. And the reason they released their arrow on exhalation was because they got much better accuracy. Much better accuracy. Because, as you just heard, when you breathe out, your heart rate slows, such that the time between pulses is longer to allow you to release your arrow without that pulsing movement. Because, obviously, there's a pulse of blood going down your arm, and if you're holding a bow out, you amplify that movement of the pulse. So by slowing your heart rate and actually softening the beat, the tip of the arrow didn't bounce around so much, and that helped the medieval archers. So they knew about the breathing control of heart rate. I want to talk a little bit more, if I may, about exercise. Exercise is nature's way of keeping the heart healthy, because it's a muscle. Just like your skeletal muscle needs exercise, your heart needs exercise. And your heart is elastic in the sense that it has to balloon out in order that it can take in more blood, as we were demonstrating with the syringe. And if it loses that elasticity, it becomes stiff, then it struggles to fill adequately, particularly on exertion, on exercise. And we run into a condition called heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. And that, unfortunately, is not great news, because there is no cure for it. But in Manaki Manawa, we believe that the way to get to the problems of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, in other words, a stiff ventricle that won't relax to fill properly, is to treat what causes it, which is hypertension, high blood pressure. One in three of us will have high blood pressure in this room, and I'm one of those. In Manaki Manawa, we have discovered, thanks to the giraffe, a brand new target that controls blood pressure we had no idea about. So just close your eyes now. You're in Africa on the savannah, and you're in a 4x4, and you spot a giraffe galloping across the savannah. Beautiful animal. I'm a physiologist, and for me, the giraffe is the most amazing animal from a physiological perspective because of this enormous 2-meter-length neck. High up on that neck is that brain. How on earth does it ever get enough blood into its brain? Because blood is heavy and pulled down by gravity. It turns out that the giraffe is physiologically hypertensive. Our pressure, as we heard earlier, when we were joking around with our gynecologist here, is around 100, but the giraffe's blood pressure is 200 millimetres of mercury. But it doesn't die of cardiovascular disease. Do you know what giraffes die of? Lions. Spot on. Please, have a prize. I've got to get rid of them somewhere. Lions. And in fact, the reason that giraffes have long necks is because they need a periscope onto which to put their beautiful eyes so they can see the lions before the lions can see the giraffe. They have the best vision of any animal on the planet. The other problem with giraffe, you think about it, they've got this enormous long windpipe. And they've got to ventilate that windpipe. So a lot of the air they bring in never gets to their lungs. So they can't run for too long. So they've really depended upon this eyesight and long neck in order to move away from the lions. But let me come back to this long neck, because at birth they don't have a long neck. And lo and behold, they don't have high blood pressure. And as the neck gets longer, the blood pressure goes up, which suggested to us that there must be something at the top of the neck here that's detecting blood pressure. And we found it. It's the size of a rice grain, and it sits right where the main artery, just before it goes into the brain. And it's sensing blood flow, blood pressure. And it's called the carotid body. And so what we did is we removed the carotid body from a bunch of hypertensive patients that were very hypertensive, six drugs or more, desperate situation. And they were kind enough and willing, under ethics, of course, to allow us to form a small operation to remove one of their carotid bodies, to demonstrate for the first time that if you do that, we lowered their blood pressure by about 25 millimetres of mercury, which is not a bad amount of pressure. But it demonstrated that, yes, we have found an organ that controls blood pressure, and now what we're doing is we are testing brand new drugs, repurposed drugs, already through toxicology and everything else, to target this organ to bring pressure down. And we haven't had a new antihypertensive pill for 25 years. 50% of patients on antihypertensives remain with high blood pressure. We need a new way to treat it. We think we found a new way. And I hope within a couple of years we'll be able to actually start better controlling blood pressure and indeed blood sugar, because these little rice grains also sense blood sugar. And so it might be that we have a one-stop shop for controlling blood pressure and blood sugar. So that, again, is great excitement in Menaki Manawa. I said in my talk blurb that I wanted to talk a little bit about exercise, because exercise is interesting. You definitely, with lots of exercise, trained athletes get bigger hearts. But this is not pathological. This is physiological, because you build more muscle. Because you exercise more, your heart exercises more and it gets stronger. But the other thing that happens is that it also slows down. So if you're really fit, you have a very low heart rate. And the reason and advantage of that, of course, is that if you can only go up to a certain level, you're much better off starting from a lower level. Sorry, you can only go up to a certain high level. Let's say you can only go up to 180 beats per minute. You're better off starting at 40 to 180, gives you a change, therefore, of 140 beats. But if you're starting at 70 and going up to 180, obviously you've only got a limited number of those beats, so you have a limited capacity. So you're building capacity by lowering your heart rate. And this is through a nerve called the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is all over the media at the moment. People are putting electrical stimulators on their ears to stimulate branches of the vagus nerve for digestion, for inflammation, for dementia. And tonight, you're going to see how we activate the vagus nerve to slow the heart rate. And I'm going to ask Ava to come up again. And she is going to show you that if you put your face in ice-cold water, I'm not joking, you have a diving response which drives the vagus and puts the brake on your heart rate. So Eva, if you want to come up again. Do we still have power? This is a physiological response because when you put your face into, when you dive into water, you obviously stop breathing. And the heart is told to slow up to preserve energy. And the way it can preserve energy, because it's so dependent upon oxygen, it can't use what we call anaerobic metabolism, it has to use aerobic metabolism, that it slows it right down. And this nerve is the nerve that also slows the heart down in a trained athlete. And we're going to see if we can activate this nerve in a completely non-invasive way. So back on with the beeper. You notice she's wearing gloves. She's fully prepared. Because without keeping your finger warm, you don't have good blood flow, and therefore we can't pick up a signal. All right. So just keep that still. So you're going to breathe in, aren't you? Just let a little air out. And then in her own time, she'll put her face in the cold water. Gone up because it's cold. It's a bit of a pain. Just wait. Here it comes. Right? You hear that? Listen at that. Stay. Amazing. Listen at that. Almost stopped. The heart saying, no oxygen, we're not breathing, I'm slowing down. Remarkable. This is the vagus nerve live being activated in this young lady. Whoa, okay, enough. Well done.
This is going to cost you, dear.
Yeah, I'll have another chocolate fish.
You want another chocolate fish? Here you are. Here's the fish. Fish market fish. Power of physiology, remarkable. I want to end, because I'm running out of time and there's so much else we could talk about, but I want to talk about love and the heart. And why is it that the heart is associated with love? Why is the shape, you know, why is that St. Valentine's Day? Why the heart? What is it about the heart? And so there's a number of things. The first thing is, there's all sorts of sayings, aren't there? Bless you, bless your heart. There's absence makes the heart grow fonder. Broken hearted. There's die of a broken heart. There's follow your heart and do what you believe in. The way to a man's heart, certainly mine, is through his stomach. As you probably saw earlier on when I was. And then when two hearts beat as one, a sign of true love. Nice. So why the heart? The Greek philosophers, Aristotle and Plato, knew very well that when you see someone that you like, your heart pounded. And that probably underpins a lot of the association, is the pounding of our heart. We actually can feel our heart. Venus, god of love, of course, set hearts on fire, and her son Cupid fired darts into her heart to enrage it, to evoke more activity around the whole business of love. Association there of heart activity and love. Now, the Romans said that on your fourth finger of your left hand There was a vein that went straight to your heart. Did you know that? Neither did I. It's absolute rubbish. But it's a lovely idea, and as a result, look what happened. That's why we wear our wedding ring on that finger. Because of this, and they called it, and I love this bit, they called it Vena Amori, the vein of love. And so I was thinking about this as I was preparing the notes and thinking, well, you know, if you went, and it's difficult to do this, if you went around doing that, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then I was thinking, what if you did that? We won't go there. The Romans also thought the external genitalia of the woman resembled a heart, and we'd, I mean, I wouldn't know, but we'd have to consult our gynecologist friend again about that. So perhaps we move over that one quickly. You know, the first heart-shaped offering that's in the literature is from 1344 in a manuscript, The Romance of Alexander. It's a French manuscript, and he is presenting his girlfriend or his beloved with a heart-shaped stone and holds his heart like this, and this beautiful picture in this manuscript back to 1344. So this shape and association has been around an awful long time. But I think the thing that does it for me is the plant Silphium. Silphium, you see, has pods that are heart-shaped. And Silphium extract, as the Greeks and Romans found out, is one, an aphrodisiac. It's also a contraceptive. And it's the first form of Viagra. So let me tell you something else. Before you guys and girls all go down to King's Plant Barn looking for Silphium tomorrow morning, let me tell you one thing. It's extinct. Because the Romans and Greeks used it all up. Thank you.
Thank you so much, William.
Thank you very much.